It's time for Blessed to Play on EWTN Radio, uncovering the role that faith plays in the lives of sports professionals from around the country. And now, here's your host, Ron Meyer.
Fire, score!
Joining me today is a returning guest. Lisa Kelly is a prolific author and graduate of Notre Dame, who has penned 5 books on Notre Dame football. She contributes a weekly column to One Foot Down, SB Nation, and provides comprehensive coverage of Notre Dame football during the season. I enjoyed our first interview, and I have to say, having friends that are student-athletes or past student-athletes at Notre Dame, the one thing that I saw that they all had in common was this balanced life, and they were able to succeed in life. And Lisa really captures that in her book, Echoes from the End Zone, The Men We Became. We're going to focus on a few of those players in the book, but I'd like to welcome Lisa back to Blessed to Play. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, before we get started on these athletes and talk about your interviews with them, I want to get your take on what is the Notre Dame value stream. How would you define that?
I think the Notre Dame value stream is kind of the toolbox that Notre Dame prepares all of their students with so that they're ready to go out into the world. And, you know, not only academically are they ready, but just morally, you know, they're prepared to make good choices and make a difference out in the world.
Now, you know, one of the things that this value stream really brings to the forefront is virtue and these good habits. And a number of these athletes have had that not only on the field, but off the field. And they've built a lot of character with that and have been successful by, you know, tapping into this value stream. I'm sure they've had others, whether it be parental or other influences in their life, but this was a strong component in their life indeed. And one of those athletes in your books, Lisa, is Marv Russell, a linebacker, and he was a football player in the 70s under Coach Arab Parsegian. He grew up Methodist and wanted to be a minister, but let's say his path to Notre Dame did not come without some roadblocks. In fact, Arab Parsegian, the coach at the time, denied him to be a football player, but that didn't stop Marv Russell, did it?
No, it sure did not. You know, I mean, at that point, Notre Dame was really kind of honing in on you're a student first and you're an athlete second. You know, that's why the word is student athlete. And Arab told him, you know, your grades aren't good enough, try again. And so he did a year of college prep, and he came back, and he applied again, and he got in.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, how he wound up playing for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish and even matriculated to the university. You know, Arab Parsegian left, and then Dan Devine came. So Marv had to deal, you know, not only with adversity in his life as far as getting into the institution, but now there was a new coach that he had to deal with and perform under.
Yeah, and I think the two coaches coached very differently, you know, and so they were so used to how Era was coaching, and then this new guy comes along and they kind of have to learn the rules of the game all over again.
Now, how was his playing career at Notre Dame? His statistics, how, you know, basically he came on as a walk-on, I believe, but how did he fare on the team and the playing time that he did receive?
Well, he started as a freshman, and his freshman year, they went and won the national championship. So, you know, pretty decent start to his career for sure.
Obviously, he graduated from Notre Dame. His football career was behind him, but that didn't stop him from succeeding in other areas of life. He had a strong faith background, but he went into kind of a field that, I don't know, human resources. I don't think he had that on the radar, but that's where he landed, and I understand it was like the largest Catholic healthcare organization in America where he was a senior vice president. But talk about that path to his professional life.
Yeah, after he graduated from Notre Dame, he had too many injuries to really move into the NFL. And so he started doing social services in South Bend. And then he was doing that. He was pastoring 2 churches. And then he decided, you know, to really take care of his family, he needed a job that was going to pay the bills, and moved into human resources, which, you know, he wasn't sure he was going to like, but he ended up not only really liking it, but being very successful at it.
So when you did the interview with Marv Russell, I'm not sure when you did it, but what stood out about him to you? I'm sure when you're doing these interviews, there's always a nugget or two that kind of grabs you and says, wow, that's quite interesting.
Marv to me was, you know, he ended up being a mentor to me. He ended up being my writing coach. So from the relationship that we built, starting with that interview, I circled back to Marv and I said, I have all these really great interviews. I'd like to make a book out of this, but I just don't really know how to do it. And so Marv took me under his wings. He became my writing coach, and he really showed me how to take all these Q&A interviews and turn them into stories. And, you know, years later, he's still a big part of my life and his family. I'm really good friends with his wife, and I grew to know his mother-in-law, and, you know, his family and my family kind of became really close. And it just was a really cool thing to come out of that. You know, those types of relationships I never expected to come out of these interviews and writing these books. But, you know, it has happened time and time and again. And Marv was kind of one of the first.
Bus to Play, Ron Meyer. We're chatting today with Lisa Kelly. She's the author of a number of books, but we're focusing on Echoes from the End Zone, The Man We Became. She has that right on our website, lisaannkelly.com. Now, Marv Russell, I'm sure that he's really in tune with Notre Dame and comes back for all the gatherings. How much is he, often his professional career, does he give back to the institution?
He gets back fairly often. They have family in Chicago. His mother-in-law lives in Chicago, so I know that they come back to visit her quite often and then make the 90-mile trip over to South Bend. And so I run into him a lot at games, and one of his sister-in-laws came to see me at my book signing a couple weeks ago. So like I said, it really is kind of a family relationship.
Yeah, that's great. But Lisa, let's move on to another athlete. And he was not only a football player, but the man could run. He was a world marathoner, a runner, Pat Fallon, a Notre Dame wide receiver under Coach Lou Holtz. He won a natty. What could you tell us about Pat's journey to playing for the Irish?
You know, Pat's another one. He had his sights set on Notre Dame, but his grades weren't quite good enough either. But that didn't cause him to give up. He went to UMass for a year and, you know, really honed in on his studies, and he applied again and he got into Notre Dame. But when he got to Notre Dame, he wasn't on the football team. Mm-hmm. You know, he decided a couple months into school, man, I really miss playing football, and walked into the football office and said, you know, I want to walk on the team. And so they gave him a shot, and it worked out for him.
Yeah, I understand. He started with winter workouts, and then, you know, he was around the team, and they gave him a shot. Would you say Coach Lou Holtz was, you know, not many Division I coaches, especially with the notoriety of a program like Notre Dame, would give walk-ons a chance? You know, they're all about the recruiting. Was that a special, I don't know if it's a virtue, a special characteristic of Lou Holtz to give kids a chance that nobody else would?
I think it's a Notre Dame thing, because even if you look at the team today, they still let walk-ons come in and give it a shot. So, and I really like that. I mean, obviously you have your starters, but you never know when you're going to have a couple injuries and you need to have that depth on the bench. And, you know, I think walk-ons have made a very big impact on Notre Dame over the years, and Pat was one of them.
I mentioned that Pat won a national championship under Coach Lou Holtz, and he decided to also get into running, and long distances he would run. The World Marathon Challenge survivor, Lisa, tell us about what Pat decided to do after football as far as logging some miles.
Yeah, it's a great story. At the time, Pat's kids were 6 and 9, and they had friends that had twin boys that were 7 years old, and one of the boys got brain cancer. And, you know, Pat was trying to ignore it. I mean, his kids were the same age, and it was really hard. And, you know, it just kept appearing in front of him. And he's like, okay, I can't ignore this. He really wanted to do something to help the family. And late night one night on ESPN, he saw some coverage of the World Marathon Challenge. So he called in to see if he could compete, and they needed one more person. And so at 49 years old, he had 3 months to prepare for this. And the World Marathon Challenge is 7 marathons in 7 consecutive days on 7 continents.
Wow.
Pretty big deal. Yeah.
We're talking Antarctica here. Is that what we're talking about here?
Where the first one was, yeah.
Well, those cold days in South Bend playing might have prepared him for that leg of the marathon. Indeed, that's quite a story of Pat Fallon. And also, Pat was a busy guy, wasn't he? He was part of the Air Force ROTC. So serving country was also important to this wide receiver from Notre Dame.
Very important. You know, he's definitely a family man. You know, he wanted to serve his country. He went and served in the Air Force till he was 26. And then he started a company that, you know, was benefiting veterans. I mean, he was always looking for ways to give back. And then he went on, you know, to get into politics. Mm-hmm. But again, he's still trying to find ways to make a difference in his community. And, you know, I really respect him for that. It's not an easy job.
Yeah, I believe a Texas representative there and was in the world of politics. And humility is one of those virtues that would be associated with Pat. Maybe you could tell us about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, Pat is just, he's a great man. He would give you the shirt off his back. He's a great father. You know, he gives back to his community. I mean, I think the World Marathon Challenge really kind of encapsulates the person that he is, to be able to train to do something like that, you know, to compete 7 races in 7 days. He finished the last race 7 minutes under 4 hours, and then he ended up raising $77,777, you know, for pediatric cancer. So I think, you know, he had a big goal with that, but he never really thought he would accomplish it in the fashion that he did. And, you know, he's always very humble in what he's accomplished and what he continues to accomplish.
Well, that's great stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. And on the other side, we're going to continue our discussion with Lisa Kelly. We're talking about some of her book, I should say, Echoes from the End Zone, some of the men that are in it, Notre Dame football players, when Blessed to Play returns right after.
This is Father John Trigilio. We need Catholic Radio because it is a lifeline to Holy Mother Church. Catholic Radio enables us to know what the Church teaches, but also to have solidarity with one another. It is one way that we express our commonality, our communio, that we are family, and by staying together, we can be God's children here on earth.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Blessed to Play. Ron Meyer, joined today by Lisa Kelly, a returning guest to the show. She's a prolific author, graduate of Notre Dame. She's penned 5 books on Notre Dame football, and we're talking about one of those today, Echoes from the End Zone, The Men We Became, the virtues, the characteristics of these Notre Dame football players in her book, who have since gone on to do some incredible things in their respective worlds. But the Notre Dame value stream is with them. And it's helped them become the men that they are today. I think Lisa would agree with that. And another one of those players in the book is Vegas Ferguson from Richmond, Indiana. And Lisa, why don't you, he was a great athlete, a great Notre Dame football player who went on to, with an NFL career, but his path to Notre Dame, maybe you could take us through that.
Yeah, I mean, his mom died when he was young and his grandparents raised him. And, you know, it was very important in their family that he get a good education. And so when Notre Dame came knocking, you know, they kind of really filled all of the buckets. It was academics, it was athletics, and then the you know, faith part of that was an important component to them as well. He had looked at a lot of Big Ten schools, but when Notre Dame showed up at the door, I mean, that was really where they wanted him to go to get that formation for the next chapter of his life.
Now, in fact, I read that he didn't hear about Notre Dame until his sophomore year of high school, which is unbelievable, right?
Took his visit with a cousin, and the cousin ended up not going to Notre Dame, but that visit really left a huge impression on him, and that's where he ended up going to school.
Let's get into the meat of his career. You know, he played under Dan Devine, who was, I wouldn't say he was a personal coach, but he knew the game, let's put it that way. And he had a lot of coaches under him who knew what they were doing, respective of the coaching position, whether it be quarterback, lineman, or running back. But he played with Joe Montana. So he played under some great Irish teams.
He sure did. You know, they talk about Dan Devine not being a very personable coach, right? But he definitely knew how to delegate to all of his position coaches. And I think what the guys didn't understand at the time was that, you know, Devine had experienced some things that made him kind of pull in a little bit. And so he wasn't trying to be an introvert, but that was kind of how it came off. But I mean, he was an incredible coach and led them to a national championship. So, you know, he did very well when he was at Notre Dame.
Well, let me pull some stats for our listening audience about Vegas. Nation's fifth leading rusher, fifth in the Heisman Trophy voting with All-American honors, and he ranks third all-time with total yards, with over 3,000 among Notre Dame running backs, averaging 5.2 yards per carry. He was a first-round pick in the 1980 NFL draft and played for five seasons with the Patriots, Browns, and Oilers. And he's also in the Indiana Football Hall of Fame. So he'll go down as one of the best running backs in the history of the school.
For sure. They keep flashing his stats because Jeremiah Love is inching his way up there. So I get a big kick out of it. Every time those numbers come up, you see Vegas's name. So it's pretty cool.
Now, Vegas would say that there was a position coach that helped him really with his career. And I'll throw up, once you hear this last name, folks, you'll know what family he comes from. But Jim Gruden had a significant impact on Vegas's career as a running back.
Yeah, he did. When Vegas was being recruited, Gruden was coaching at Indiana. And he told him, someday I'm going to coach you. And sure enough, while Vegas was at Notre Dame, Gruden moved from Indiana to Notre Dame and became his coach. So he was able to study under him and really kind of advance his craft.
Now, the concept of the student athlete, he didn't shy away from that. He actually embraced that, student first, athlete second. And that was very appealing to Vegas and also his family as well.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, if you think about your time in college, I mean, obviously athletes want to do well in their sport, but we all know that sports don't last forever. And so leaving a college with a great education is what is going to propel you through the rest of your life. You know, Notre Dame does a great job at kind of shaping the whole person. So it's not just your academics, it's your faith development. And for the student athletes, it's their athletic development. And I just really like that model of education that they provide.
What could you tell us about Vegas after his time playing professional football in the NFL? What did he go on to do with the rest of his life post his NFL career?
Sure. When, you know, after he was done in the NFL, he played a little bit in the USFL. And when that was done, he was in Chicago. He didn't really at that point want to go back to Richmond, Indiana. And so he had a friend that had a connection at a company that was based out of Richmond, but looking for a sales position in Chicago. So he was able to kind of get his foot in the door from a friend and get an interview, and he got the job. So that allowed him to stay in Chicago for a while. And then, you know, you hit a point in your life where you just want to go home. And Vegas was at that point in 1991. And he got a phone call from Richmond High School saying, hey, we're interested in you coming back home. We have a position for you. So it was kind of like perfect timing because he was inching that direction anyways, and this job just kind of materialized. And he was able to go back home and, you know, let his kids grow up and have build a relationship with his grandparents.
Now, let me ask you what I asked about Marv Russell about Vegas. What stuck out during your interview with him? Was there something that grabbed you when interviewing Vegas?
Well, it's funny because I also have family in Richmond, Indiana. And so Vegas and I had an instant connection because, you know, I was telling him about my great aunt Virginia who had a farm in Richmond, Indiana. And I always try to find something before I interview someone that, like, a connection that we already have, or I talk to another athlete to get a funny story that shows that I did my homework. You know, I'm not just asking generic questions. I really try to find something that kind of sparks at the beginning of the interview. And so that instant connection, I mean, obviously we already had the Notre Dame connection, but being that we had family from Richmond, Indiana, that really kind of built a bond with him. And, you know, periodically I run into him and, how's your family? You know, have you been back to Richmond lately? And then my son went to college in Dayton, Ohio, and Richmond's not very far from that. So I got to run into him a couple of times while my son was in school. So it's just really awesome, the relationships that I built with these guys. I never really expected that. I kind of expected, you know, you interview someone for 60 to 90 minutes and that's kind of it. But a lot of these guys I've built long-term relationships with, and it's truly been a blessing.
Blessed to Play, Ron Meyer. Once again, we're chatting today with Lisa Kelly. She's the author of the book, Echoes from the End Zone, The Men We Became. We talked about three of those athletes from her book, but she's not only, you know, writing books about football, she writes about recipes as well. Domer Dishes, Inside the Lives and Kitchens of Your Irish Gridiron Greats. And Lisa, I talked to you about this off air, but one of the recipes came from this guy called Lou Holtz, but it had some pumpkin in it. Maybe you could tell us about that recipe.
It's amazing. So if you think about like a carrot cake recipe, it's very similar, but it's a pumpkin cake and it has that same kind of a cream cheese icing on it. But, you know, when I was writing the cookbook, it was during the pandemic. We were all stuck at home. And I'm not really the cook in my family. So my husband did most of the cooking and I did most of the eating. And of course, I did all the photography and the writing. But when he made this one, he read the directions wrong and we put 2 cans of pumpkin in it instead of 2 cups of pumpkin. And I will say it was still really good. It just was probably a little more pumpkin-y than it was supposed to be.
You know, Lou might like the new version of this recipe. You know, everything could be an upgrade. All right, Lisa, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Out of all these recipes, you had Rick Muir, you had Coach Holtz. We talked about the pumpkin cake. Ryan Harris, Super Bowl chili. Rocky Blyer, cauliflower soup. How about that? And I failed to mention Rick Meyer, best baby back ribs. What is Lisa's favorite recipe?
You know, they were all really good. You know, I hate to pick favorites, but one of my favorites was definitely Romano's rigatoni. It's from Johnny Romano, the leprechaun, whose grandfather played on 3 of the championship teams in the 40s. So they have a rich family history of Notre Dame football, but man, his rigatoni, it was his grandfather's recipe and it's to die for.
Bon appetit. What recipe surprised you? You said you wouldn't expect that out of this person that you were getting the recipe from.
I mean, I really didn't expect cauliflower soup from Rocky Blyer. You know, he was amazing. It was so interesting to get a chance to talk to him, and I got to meet him in person the next year, and just, I mean, obviously he's an incredible human being, you know, after what he went through in Vietnam, but just to meet him in person was a true honor.
You know, having this, all these recipes, and do you try them more than once, or is this something you've tried on multiple occasions? How does that go in your household?
I mean, we cooked all of them, but there are some that we keep eating on repeat. You know, some of them, a couple of the rib dishes, I mean, they just fall off the bone. I'm a soup person, so I've made the soup multiple times. Braxton Banks sweet potato bake is now on our holiday menu. I mean, everybody can't wait for that one. You know, there are some things that I had never had before. So, I mean, I got to Autry Denson's oxtail recipe. I don't know if you've ever had oxtail before, but that was my first time not only eating oxtail, but cooking oxtail. So that was a learning experience for us. So, I mean, red snapper, I don't think I'd ever cooked red snapper before. So,
yeah.
I learned a lot about my taste palette and, you know, things that I didn't think I would like that I did. So it was definitely a learning experience.
Some culinary desires in her book, Domer Dishes. And I see Rocky Blyer from time to time. I'm always going to remember what soup that he likes, cauliflower. So I'll have to bring that up to him. Well, Lisa Kelly has been our guest here on Blessed to Play, talking about some of the lives of the athletes in her book, Echoes from the End Zone, The Men We Became. You could go to lisaannkelly.com to learn more about that, and also Domer Dishes as well. Lisa, thanks so much for coming on, taking some time to talk about some of these players in your book and also those good recipes. I appreciate you spending some time with us right here on Blessed to Play.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Blessed to Play fans, check us out on the web at blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed2play.com. You can like us on Facebook. Hit us up on the platform X at Blessed to Play. For Lisa Kelly, I'm Ron Meyer. Thanks so much for joining us right here on Blessed to Play.
You've been listening to Blessed to Play with host Ron Meyer on the EWTN Global Catholic Network. If you have a question or comment about today's show, feel free to email us at info@blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed2play.com. You can also connect with the show on the web at www.blessedtoplay.com. Again, that's blessed2play.com. Join us again next time for Blessed to Play on the EWTN Global Catholic Network.